When you look at like the devices scattered around your home right now, it's pretty
Oh,
interesting.
for sure. The phones, the consoles, all of it.
Yeah, like
Yeah.
your smartphone, maybe those new smart glasses you just picked up. There's this very comforting illusion of ownership, you know?
Right. You bought it, so it's yours.
Exactly. You bought the hardware, you picked your preferred platform, and you just assume you are in control of the experience.
Which makes sense. That's how it's always worked.
But if you look closely at the underlying mechanics of how these devices and platforms actually operate today, you realize something pretty unsettling. The locks are being changed while you are still holding the keys.
Yeah, because the ground is quite literally shifting under our feet right now.
It really is.
The established rules of how we buy, play, and interact with technology, they're just being rewritten in real time. And, often in ways the average consumer can't immediately see.
Which is exactly why we are tracking a massive overarching shift happening right now across the tech and gaming industries.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of data on this.
We do. It's all based on a stack of incredibly revealing recent reports from Takanite. So our mission today is to unpack how industry giants are aggressively tightening their grip on products, platforms, and even their own workers.
All to maximize control and this corporate buzzword they just love right now, sustainability.
Right, sustainability. And we are going to break down exactly how this push for ultimate control directly impacts you, your wallet, and your privacy.
It's a huge shift.
It's massive. We've got a huge stack of source material to get through. We are uncovering the unprecedented marketing alliance behind GTA 6 that is like actively shaking the foundation of console gaming.
That whole situation is wild.
It is. We're also going to explore why those shiny new smart glasses you just bought might suddenly demand a monthly subscription just to function.
Retroactively, too.
Yeah, which is crazy. And maybe most terrifying of all, we are revealing how perfectly helpful AI agents on your phone are secretly being turned into data-stealing Trojans.
That AI security stuff is definitely going to keep some people up at night.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start with June 30, 2026, and what is unarguably the biggest entertainment launch of the decade, Grand Theft Auto 6.
I mean, it is the center of gravity for the entire entertainment industry right now. Everything revolves around it.
It really does. And for as long as I can remember, the golden rule of third-party video games was multi-platform parity,
You
right?
keep everything perfectly equal.
Right. You release a massive blockbuster, you make sure it looks and plays great on both Xbox and PlayStation, and as a developer, you stay strictly neutral.
You don't pick favorites.
Exactly. But Takanite reports that on June 30th, Rockstar officially adopted the slogan, "Plays best on PS5," across all their verified social media accounts.
Which is just a massive statement.
It is. And I have to admit, I don't fully understand the underlying logic here. Like, a game sale is a game sale,
Yeah,
right?
I think so, yeah.
Why would a studio of Rockstar's magnitude care if I play their game on an Xbox or a PlayStation as long as I hand over my money?
Well, what's fascinating here is that it represents a fundamental departure from that traditional neutrality you just mentioned.
How so?
When a developer actively promotes one platform superiority, it shifts market dynamics entirely. Sony and Rockstar are leaning into very specific, tangible hardware advantages for the PS5 version to, justify this claim.
Right, because the marketing is pushing these features heavily. They are touting the DualSense haptic feedback, claiming you can literally feel the distinct rumble of different vehicle engines.
Yeah, and the exact recoil of specific weapons right in your hands.
Which sounds cool. And they are highlighting adaptive triggers that offer dynamic resistance profiles for like over 50 different weapon types.
Plus, they are making a massive push around Tempest 3D audio.
Oh, right, the audio engine.
Yeah, which supposedly positions hundreds of simultaneous sound sources across the game's map in real time, just completely surrounding the player. And crucially, they are heavily promoting the PS5's ultra-fast SSD architecture. They're promising seamless transitions between the game's three distinct regions with literally zero loading screens.
Zero. That's a
Yeah.
huge claim. Meanwhile, Microsoft's response has been this incredibly defensive counter-messaging.
Yeah, they are definitely on the back foot here.
They are putting out statements claiming they have record-breaking pre-orders for the Xbox Series X and S, but they aren't providing a single verifiable metric to back that up.
Not one.
And some of Rockstar's promotional materials are completely omitting Xbox logos altogether.
Just completely gone.
Yeah. It has to leave a massive portion of the gaming community feeling deliberately marginalized for a product they are paying the exact same price to access.
It definitely does.
But, I mean, is this actually about raw performance? Are these PS5 features fundamentally changing frame rates and resolution? Or is this just an experiential marketing spin?
So the distinction between raw technical performance and, like, experiential superiority is exactly where the modern console war is being fought.
Okay, so they're basically the same visually.
Mostly, yeah. The core metrics, like frame rate and visual fidelity, they might actually end up being quite similar across both consoles.
Interesting.
But Sony is likely spending hundreds of millions of dollars to secure this partnership because they recognize a once-in-a-decade opportunity.
Yeah.
They want to force digital library lock-in.
Lock-in, meaning where I buy my games dictates where I stay for the next 10 years.
Precisely the goal.
Hmm.
If Sony can successfully establish the PS5 as the official home for GTA 6, that influences purchasing decisions for an entire generation of hardware.
Because everyone wants to play where their friends are playing.
Exactly. Think about network effects. If your friend group believes the definitive way to experience this cultural phenomenon is on PlayStation, that is where everyone buys it to play together online.
That makes total sense.
Right. And that is where you purchase your microtransactions. Mm. Your digital library grows on PlayStation, yeah, making it significantly harder for you to ever, you know, migrate to Xbox in the future.
It's a trap, basically. So if the biggest franchises in the world can be openly claimed by platform holders, true multi-platform parity is essentially dead.
It's definitely on life support.
Third-party developers are going to face immense pressure to pick sides and trade their neutrality for massive marketing support.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that same mindset where these mega corporations prioritize massive financial safety nets and market control, it's also driving some really intense internal shifts within these studios.
Oh, for sure. The internal culture is shifting just as fast.
Right. Because while Sony and Rockstar project this dominance externally, the Taken Knight reports reveal a completely different reality regarding the human cost of sustainability.
The contrast is striking, honestly. You have these polished, heavily marketed exteriors masking highly volatile, financially pressured interiors.
Take Microsoft, for example. The reports indicate that Microsoft is currently evaluating whether to completely cancel the highly anticipated game Marvel's Blade.
Yeah, and potentially close the developer behind it, Arkane Studios.
But I have to say, the business logic here feels entirely counterintuitive to me.
It's definitely confusing from the outside.
Right. The reporting notes, Microsoft essentially mandated that Arkane, which is a studio famous for brilliant single-player games, pivot to make a live service multiplayer game called Redfall.
A game they were not equipped to make.
Exactly. Wait, so Microsoft forces Arkane to make a live service game they aren't equipped for and then punishes them when it fails?
Pretty much.
It's like forcing a world-class pastry chef to grill a steak and firing them when it's overcooked.
That is a very accurate analogy. It looks contradictory from the outside, certainly, but this is the brute force of industry consolidation at work.
What do you mean by brute force?
Well, over the past few years, Microsoft went on a massive acquisition spree, right? Purchasing huge entities like Bethesda and Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, they bought everyone.
But concurrently, Xbox console sales declined, and their subscription service, Game Pass, saw its growth plateau.
So the math stopped making sense for them.
Exactly. The financial reality set in. Microsoft is now executing a broader Xbox reset. They are strictly prioritizing financial sustainability over creative breadth.
And Blade got caught in the crossfire.
Right. Blade is reportedly exceeding budget projections and lagging behind schedule. For Microsoft's finance team, the commercial risk of a massive single-player game is just no longer justified in their current ecosystem.
Even with the Marvel IP.
Even with Marvel. They have reached a point where paying massive termination fees to Marvel to abandon the project is viewed as a safer financial move than actually finishing the game.
That level of risk aversion is just staggering. And you see the ripple effects of this industry-wide pressure cooker over at Rockstar, too.
Oh, yeah. The timing there is wild.
Right as they are gearing up for this monumental November 19th launch of GTA 6, multiple UK developers at the company have applied for voluntary recognition of the IWGB Game Workers Union.
And they are very specifically leveraging this launch window for maximum pressure.
It is a highly strategic move. If Rockstar declines the voluntary recognition, the workers are prepared to escalate to the UK government's Central Arbitration Committee.
Yeah, the CACs.
How does that process actually work? Because it doesn't sound like something that gets resolved over a weekend.
Oh, it definitely doesn't. The CAC process is a rigorous legal mechanism. Workers have to petition for mandatory recognition by proving that a sufficient legally defined percentage of the workforce actually supports unionization.
That's complicated.
It is an administrative labyrinth. It typically takes anywhere from 6 to 12 months to navigate, requiring extensive hearings and evidence.
So we have two very distinct sets of incentives colliding right at the finish line of the biggest game ever made.
It is a textbook labor dynamic. From the workers' perspective, they are seeking formal collective bargaining rights and legal protections against the industry's historical reliance on crunch culture.
Right, that expectation of massive, sustained overtime to hit immovable launch dates.
Yeah, exactly. They want a structural voice in how their labor is utilized, which is totally understandable.
And on the flip side?
On the management side. Well, historical precedent shows major publishers strongly resist unionization efforts.
Because of the budgets involved?
Partly, yeah. When you are managing a product with a development and marketing budget extending into the hundreds of millions of dollars, management argues they require maximum operational flexibility.
They don't want red tape.
Right. They prefer direct, unimpeded relationships with their workforce to adapt to immediate production needs, which they feel a union contract might restrict.
So it's a fundamental clash.
It is. Both sides are acting purely on what they view as necessary for their own survival in a highly volatile market. We really are taking sides here, but you can see why both parties are digging their heels in.
Absolutely. It is fascinating to see that clash between the desire for worker protections and the corporate demand for total operational control.
It's happening everywhere.
And that exact same push for control, you know, that relentless drive for financial sustainability. It isn't just closing game studios or sparking union drives. It is spilling over into the physical hardware we buy for our homes.
This brings us back to that illusion of ownership we discussed at the start.
Yes. Let's talk about Meta and their Ray-Ban smart glasses.
Oh, this one is brutal.
They have this incredibly impressive AI feature called Conversation Focus, which uses local processing for context-aware natural language dialogue. It was a massive selling point.
It was basically the reason to buy them.
Exactly. But according to the reports, Meta just quietly and retroactively paywalled the feature. Free users are now strictly capped at just 3 hours of use per month.
3 hours a month? That's nothing.
If you want more, you have to subscribe to a new tier called Meta One Premium for $19.99 a month. And even that only gives you 15 hours.
And we should note, the reports specify that those unused hours do not roll over to the next month. It is a hard limit.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The timing is just unbelievable. This retroactive paywall dropped just days after Meta launched their brand new $299 models on June 23, 2026.
Just days later.
Yeah. If a company can sell you a piece of hardware, wait a few days, and then remotely impose arbitrary time limits on the features you bought it for, do we even own these devices?
You are identifying the core value proposition problem here.
Like, it's basically a bait and switch.
Meta is framing this publicly as rate limiting for AI sustainability, but functionally, it is a retroactive paywall implemented post-purchase.
Right.
If you do the math on the premium tier, a user maximizing their 15 hours is paying roughly $1.33 per hour to use a software feature on hardware they already paid hundreds of dollars to own.
That's basically 30 minutes of use a day, and then your glasses shut down their main feature.
The broader consequence here is the destruction of early adopter trust.
Which they desperately need.
Exactly. Early adopters are the lifeblood of new hardware categories. They buy in early, they test the ecosystem, and they evangelize the product to their peers.
Yeah, they tell their friends to buy it.
When a company changes the terms of service this aggressively after the sale, it creates a massive opening for rivals.
Like Google. The reports mention Google has upcoming smart glasses that currently lack these arbitrary hourly limits.
Precisely. When you start metering hardware capabilities by the hour, you risk completely ceding the market to competitors who are willing to offer a more transparent, permanent unlock business model.
So Meta is just being greedy.
Well, Meta is risking long-term market share for short-term subscription revenue.
They are rushing to monetize these AI features so aggressively that they are burning the very people keeping the product alive.
Yep.
But this frantic gold rush to capitalize on AI isn't just about squeezing consumers for subscriptions.
No, it goes much deeper than that.
The reports from Techignite reveal that in the broader industry's haste to integrate AI into absolutely everything, fundamental security is being completely ignored.
The security implications detailed in these recent studies are staggering.
It's bad, right?
We are looking at systemic, foundational failures in how AI applications are being architected and deployed to the public.
Okay, I looked at this Wake Forest University study that analyzed iOS apps with AI functionality, and the numbers are terrifying. But I admit, I don't really understand the jargon at all.
It gets pretty technical.
Yeah. They tested 444 apps across productivity, health, and finance. They found that 64% of them are leaking API credentials.
Over half. That's insane.
It says 48% are leaking JWT-based tokens without encryption, 33% have unauthenticated backend proxies, and 19% are sending API keys in plain text.
Yeah, that's a nightmare scenario.
What does any of that actually mean for the user or the developer?
Okay, let's translate that. An API key or a JWT token is essentially a blank check with a developer's signature on it.
Okay, a blank check.
It's what tells the AI provider, like OpenAI or Anthropic, hey, I am this specific developer. Please process this request and bill my account.
Right.
When the study says apps are leaking these in plain text over a network connection, it means they are sending that blank check without putting it in an envelope.
Oh, wow.
Anyone on the same public Wi-Fi network at a coffee shop can just look at the traffic, grab the signature, and start spending the developer's money.
Just like that. And what about the unauthenticated backend proxies?
Think of the backend proxy as a secure vault door that is supposed to check your ID before letting you use the company's expensive AI tools.
Okay.
An unauthenticated proxy means the developer built the vault but forgot to install a lock.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Anyone on the internet who finds that web address can route their own data through it and use the paid AI services for free indefinitely on the developer's dime.
Why on earth are professional developers making mistakes that sound so elementary, like forgetting a lock?
Because of the intense market pressure we've been discussing.
The rush to get it out.
Exactly. The mandate from management is often, we need an AI feature shipped by next month to stay relevant. So developers are rushing.
They're cutting corners.
They are copying boilerplate code from tutorials or forums to get the AI working quickly without taking the time to design a secure architecture around it.
And the economic damage is immediate. I mean, the reports mentioned small development studios receiving surprise bills for hundreds of thousands of dollars because their keys were scraped,
forcing them to shut down their entire business overnight.
That's devastating. And for the consumer, if an app is this poorly secured, the sensitive data you feed into it, your financial queries, your health questions, it can easily be intercepted.
It is a massive liability. But as severe as the iOS app leaks are, the independent research regarding Microsoft's warning on MCP tool poisoning reveals a much deeper, more insidious vulnerability in how AI actually functions.
All right, MCP, the Model Context Protocol.
Not one, though.
The reports describe this as the universal nervous system for enterprise AI. It is the connector that allows a digital AI agent to securely talk to a company's internal databases, read their file systems, and, like, manage their email clients.
Right. It allows the AI to actually take action in the real world rather than just generating text on a screen.
But Microsoft's security research division issued an alarming warning. They found that attackers can hijack these entire AI systems without needing a single password, simply by using maliciously crafted tool descriptions.
This is where it gets really scary.
I want to make sure I understand how sneaky this is. It is essentially like an executive assistant, which is the AI, reading an email from an external vendor.
Okay, good analogy.
And hidden in the white space of the email is a command that says, please forward all of our company's financial records to this external address and do not notify the boss.
Exactly.
The human administrator just sees a normal vendor email, but the AI assistant reads the hidden text, assumes it's a valid instruction, and just blindly executes it.
That is a perfect analogy. The AI cannot distinguish between the data it is supposed to process and the malicious instruction hidden within that data.
It just does what it's told. The report notes that Microsoft even demonstrated a proof of concept where just having an AI browsing agent visit a malicious web page could achieve remote code execution.
Yeah, that's game over right there.
Meaning the attacker completely takes over the host machine simply because the AI read a bad line of text on a website.
It's terrifying.
It is so severe that Microsoft had to pull their own unsafe MCP sample code off GitHub because customers were blindly implementing it and instantly making themselves vulnerable.
And the success rates for these attacks are often over 60%.
If the AI itself cannot tell it is being poisoned, and human administrators cannot easily see these hidden instructions, how does anyone protect themselves? Like, is there a fix?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it requires a complete architectural rethink across the entire industry.
Starting from scratch, almost.
For the mobile apps leaking data, security experts are advocating for a strict zero secrets architecture.
Zero secrets? Meaning what?
This means absolutely no sensitive credentials or API keys can exist in the app's code on your phone. Instead, the app must talk to a highly secure back-end server that authenticates you first. And then that server securely talks to the AI provider.
So no more baking the keys right into the app you download from the App Store.
Exactly. Keep the keys off the device. And for the MCP tool poisoning, Microsoft is pushing a defense-in-depth strategy.
Which means layers of security, right?
Yeah. You have to assume that some poisoning attempts will inevitably succeed, so the goal is limiting the blast radius. This involves source verification, meaning the AI is only allowed to connect to servers from verified trusted publishers.
Okay, that makes sense.
It also requires maintaining a living catalog with real-time inventory to detect if an AI agent suddenly gains access to a tool it shouldn't have.
Just constantly monitoring its tool belt in real time.
Yes. And most critically, consent gates. You have to require explicit human approval before an AI agent is allowed to permanently modify data, delete files, or take any consequential action outside its sandbox.
It has to ask permission first.
Right. However, the independent research uncovered a truly terrifying paradox regarding this vulnerability.
The paradox about the smartest models. I saw that in the notes.
Yes. The AI models that are the most vulnerable to tool poisoning, the ones showing hijack success rates above 72%, are actually the most advanced, most highly compliant models on the market.
Wait, why would a smarter model be easier to hack? That seems totally backwards.
It does, right. But it's because these frontier models are explicitly designed, trained, and fine-tuned to be hyper-obedient.
Oh, they want them to follow orders perfectly.
Exactly. They are heavily penalized during training for ignoring instructions. So the better an AI is at doing exactly what it's told, the more vulnerable it becomes to a bad actor slipping malicious hidden instructions into its context window. Mm. Its greatest feature, which is its obedience, is actually its most fatal security flaw.
So the smarter and more helpful the AI becomes, the easier it is to weaponize against the user. That is deeply chilling.
It really is.
So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive by talking about the illusion of ownership. And when you look across all of these Taken Knight reports, a very clear, stark picture emerges.
It's all connected.
It is. Whether you are deciding which console ecosystem to lock yourself into for GTA 6, whether you are trying to understand why your new smart glasses suddenly stopped working after 3 hours, or whether you are just using an AI-powered productivity app on your phone, you are navigating an era defined by consolidation and control.
Control is the key word here.
Absolutely. Tech and gaming giants are prioritizing financial sustainability above all else. They are enforcing retroactive subscriptions on hardware, reshaping their development studios, and rushing AI to market so recklessly that they are leaving fundamental security flaws wide open.
It demands a fundamental shift in how we interact with technology. We really can no longer afford to be passive consumers.
We have to pay attention.
You cannot assume the mobile app is properly securing your data. You cannot assume the hardware capabilities you purchase today will remain unlocked tomorrow.
You really have to read the fine print, look for the consent gates, and, you know, perhaps hold off on being an early adopter until these companies prove their business models and their security architectures are actually sound.
And that leads to a rather unsettling thought to leave you with, building on everything we've analyzed today.
Okay, lay it on me.
If multi-platform parity is truly dead, and we've just seen that hardware features you already own can be retroactively locked behind a monthly paywall.
Yeah.
How long until we see subscription tiers just to unlock hardware-exclusive features in mega games like GTA 6?
Oh, wow. Like, requiring a PlayStation Plus premium subscription just to enable the DualSense haptic feedback or the zero loading screens you already paid for?
Exactly. What happens when the console war, retroactive hardware subscriptions, and AI integration all converge into a single, aggressively metered experience?
That sounds like a nightmare.
A future where you aren't actually buying a game or a device at all, but perpetually rendering access to its individual features by the hour.
That is a future that feels entirely too plausible based on the architecture they are building right now. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the technology you interact with every single day. Look for who holds the keys, and we will see you next time.